iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patty and today I'm joined by Olivia Cooper from Axiom DWFM Solicitors Firm. And Olivia Cooper is the Head of Private Wealth and Family Office as well. Her practice covers a broad range of private wealth work, including administration of single family offices, private wealth strategy and UK and international succession and lifetime planning as well. So with such a stellar background that Olivia has, it's only right that we should be inviting her back onto the iMoney Show to talk about wealth and lots of it, and just wish that we had more of it to talk about as well. But today we're going to be talking about disinheriting our children for fear of ruining their lives with wealth, a celebrity trend, which of course we've been hearing about quite a lot recently, and a well-structured family office teaches children to be custodians and develops their sense of duty. Sounds very technical. Olivia's here to simplify that for us right here on the iMoney Show. Olivia, a very warm welcome to you and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tony, for inviting me back. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's absolutely lovely having you back on again. And we are talking wealth once again, but in different types of wealth. We have a situation sometimes whereby children grow up with a silver spoon in their mouth. And what happens is that a lot of these children either come from very rich backgrounds or perhaps people from famous backgrounds as well. So do they know how to handle the wealth that's literally handed to them, put on their lap, saying, right, here you go, that's the rest of your life? Or are parents now and guardians disinheriting their children, saying, hang on, you have to earn your keep? What is your take on that?
Well, the funny thing is, because I deal with both what we call the very old money, so that's old families, and I also deal with new entrepreneurs and celebrities, I can see the different types of family right across the board because I have to deal with them on a daily basis. But one of the things I do get that does really get my back up is what is this latest trend with celebrities, whether it be dot-com masters, or we now have Daniel Craig, and we've even had Nigella Lawson talking about it, how they're refusing to leave they're leaving some wealth, but not all of their wealth to their children. And they're basically being proud parents to disinherit their children because they have this idea that they're going to just ruin their lives. And I really just see that as poor parenting. It's not a question of ruining their child's lives by leaving them money. It's because you haven't brought them up properly in the first place to actually be a custodian of that money for future generations, rather than just thinking of it as ruining their lives because they're going to become lazy, buy lots of sports cars, not that there's anything wrong with buying a sports car, but just buy lots of sports cars, lead dissolute lives and throw away all the money. And it's quite interesting because, in fact, if you look at something like the Vanderbilt family, in America, you have this saying, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. And that's because they say that's as far as the wealth will go. It'll only go three generations. And that's why the family office was invented, to get around that, to stop that sort of messing up the family line. And the reason it happens is because of poor parenting. Children become used to wealth and they see it as theirs rather than as just them being a custodian or a guardian of that wealth for the future generations. And even with the Vanderbilts, they lost an awful lot of their money through, yes, having a rather lavish lifestyle, but also through enormous philanthropy projects, which they really couldn't afford because they were not investing at the same time. And this was poor strategy. So the two ways I always say to my clients that you get around this problem is, one, you have to make sure that you'll have a single family office, which is well-structured, well, with a good governance plan in structure in place. And that will allow you to educate all generations coming up to have a role in the family, but not to rely on the wealth. They are there as custodians. They are there to look after it, to grow it, to use it in the best way possible, in line with the family ethos, and then pass it on to the next, that role onto the next generation, and so forth and so forth. And that is why the best run family offices still survive today.
Olivia, it's not unusual to see or to know whereby you've had rich parents and rich kids. And we've seen programmes all day long on this, where rich kids are brought up in a certain lifestyle. For a start, they are given private school education. They have all the advantages above all other children. And then the education system recently has also recognized that people from private schools may be at a more advantage than people from state schools. There's a whole vicious circle surrounding this. But it's not unusual to see that there are children who have been brought up in rich families and have kind of like been spoiled on the way, holidaying on the Swiss ski slopes in the south of France and various other things, and their holidays tend to last a lot longer than anybody else's. So, not that I'm envious, but the thing is, these things do happen. So have we learned anything along the way?
Yes. Well, first of all, Tony, I would like to dispel this myth. The reason you think that there's this sort of huge class of children who are very privileged, who have a very privileged lifestyle, is because those are the only children that the media will portray. I have numerous clients who have wonderful children who are very, very well grounded, who have had private school education, but are very well grounded, and they're moving through their lives in a very well disciplined manner. Yes, they have more privilege than many people, but that's the effect of money, you know. But at the same time, they're not what I would call the spoilt brat who goes from holiday to holiday and says it's an emergency because they've been put on a wait list for the latest handbag, you know, and that's an absolute emergency. And I have actually had that happen to me. So there are plenty more children who are very well brought up, but they don't make the headlines because you don't see them falling out drunk from the nightclub at 3 a.m. in the morning. You don't see them burning down a ski chalet because they've done something ridiculous like barbecue indoors. Because they don't make the headlines, you don't know about them.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, this is why celebrities latch on to the fact that we are so wonderful and so clever that we're going to disinherit our children because we can't be bothered to bring them up properly. This is the point. There are a number of children who do fall into that dreadful lifestyle, but it doesn't mean that you can't drag them back from it. And that's where good governance and really structuring things properly. I think the problem we have with people who make wealth in one generation, so where we see the new families, that sort of the celebrity clan, if you like, but also the dot-comers and so forth, because they are very much new to the money world, they haven't developed the strategy. They don't understand that money is just a thing that you use to not just get power, but you can use it for good. And so they haven't quite grasped the idea that you can actually pass that power on to family. That's what you pass down in your generation. It's not just the money.
Yeah.
You're passing on the know-how, the love, the want to do well, the want to actually achieve philanthropic projects, to actually keep the legacy going. And that's something I have to say that old money tends to do a lot better.
We are talking to Olivia Cooper, who is head of private wealth and family office at Axiom DWFM. And we're talking about the structure of family and family lives through wealth.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. Olivia, explain to us then what is meant by a celebrity trend, and do we have a situation whereby celebrities have had a trend, and what have you learnt from the past, and what can we put down as a trend for the future so that we are safeguarded?
Well, trends come and go. That's the way it is. I mean, we're seeing now this trend, as I said, about, you know, celebrities disinheriting their children, and because they seem to be of the people, and they think it makes them look more glamorous if they are sort of being, you know, encouraged to have that sort of I'm not going to leave any wealth to my children because I'm going to destroy their lives if I do so. So instead, I'm just going to spend it all while I'm alive.
Hmm.
That's very much a trend at the moment. And funny enough, it's very much a trend that's within that sort of bubble of type of person, the celebrity, the dot-com. Whereas where we have traditions, so if we look at India, for example,
I was just going to say you took the word out of my mouth.
That trend has not hit India.
Yes.
And I doubt it will make much difference in India, to be honest, because India is very much, thank God, it's still very much family centered. Hmm. And yes, they worry about younger generations and the effect, because obviously India is a booming economy in its experience in the last few years. Boom in its economy. So we've seen many more billionaires being created and millionaires and billionaires being created in India.
Yeah.
One of the things I did want to point out is that the family office is growing in popularity in India. But obviously you don't have to have the wealth of somebody like Ratan Tata, you know, who has RNT Associates as his family office. You don't have to have that sort of wealth to have a single family office. It's structuring now that has come down from the sort of tatters, and now we is that available to the mid-level as well.
So that's really useful to know, because what we're saying here is that you don't have to be a celebrity or a multimillionaire or mega rich to set up this family structure and family office as you speak of. You can start small.
You can start certainly smaller. I mean, it depends because of obviously economies of scale. I tend to say that if you're looking for something less expensive because your wealth doesn't stretch to that, then you should start with a virtual family, a single family office, which is much less expensive to set up because you outsource the work. Hmm. So you don't have a building with your name on it. You don't employ your own staff. You have all the structures, because these would be limited companies, charitable foundations, offshore trusts, etc., that form part of the family office. Those structures still exist. But you don't have a building with your name on it. You don't employ your own staff. You outsource the work to lawyers, accountants, and various investment platforms.
That's really useful.
That makes it a lot less expensive to run. Yes, you have your board. Obviously, you have to have a family office board that then comes together and analyzes all the data that comes in to make sure that the investments are working, that the philanthropy products are doing what they're supposed to be doing, et cetera, et cetera. But you have all the benefit of the single family office, but you don't have the rather large expenses that need to be paid out when you have a traditional single family office. So no, you don't have to be Ratan Tata to have a single family office.
We are talking to Olivia Cooper, who is the head of private wealth and family office at Action DWFM.
Log on to iglobalnews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iglobalnews.com. Olivia, when it comes to setting up a well-structured family office, does it in fact teach children to be custodians and develop their sense of duty? And if so, how? What's the procedure and the processes involved in that?
Well, again, that all depends on every family is different. So every single family office is different, not necessarily in all the structures, because there are so many structures around, but in how they operate and in the actual ethos of the family. Is very much down to an individual family. So some families tend to be very much pyramid shape, because you have a matriarch or a patriarch who still retains all the power of the family and wants to hold on to it. And so it's more of a pyramid shape, because it filters down this way. Otherwise, you might have a linear structure, far more linear structure, so more dumpy hill, as I like to call it, where you have more sort of parents, grandparents at the top of this, and then sort of feeding out this way to next generation. And that next generation has more involvement in how decisions are made. But basically, a single family office starts with a family's collective wealth. So it might be one person in the family who's made it, or it may be a husband and wife team, or it could be different members of the family that come together and pool their wealth together to create one single family office. So that's the different scenarios. The most important point is that they must be able to sit down first and agree what is the ethos? What are they aiming to achieve? And that is very, that sounds easy, but believe me, that's the thing, that's the part that takes the longest, not setting up the structures. It's actually getting the family members to agree.
To agree. Yes.
who does what within the family, you know. It's not easy, but it's a, once the structure is up and running and it's set up correctly, it is a structure that can weather divorce, death, and any other sort of storms that hits it, and goes down multiple generations. And that's the important point, because you're keeping that ethos going. So the investment side, for example, you may have a family office where the family is very much keen on promoting, I don't know, let's talk about India and the UK and the relations between the two. So all the investing is really centered upon promoting that. So the investment platform within the structures would be concentrated on the rules that they're allowed, where they're allowed to invest and where they're not allowed to invest, because that's set out in the family office charter.
Yes.
So they have to always refer back to the ethos of the family. And that's why every family office is different, because every ethos is different.
I was going to say cross-border family offices, how do they work? And you've almost just answered that question for us. And if I may raise a scenario of having a family office in India as well as in the UK, and you've got two families either side of the divide, how can that family office sustain itself and run itself?
Well, family offices tend to be international anyway, because no one invests all in one country. So you have to have structures that can go global, that can stretch across jurisdictions. But what you have is you will find that the structures within have a single jurisdiction. So you might have a UK company holding certain assets. You might have an offshore company holding some other assets belonging to the family. When it comes to regulation, the family ethos is held in the family office charter, and that is the Bible book for the family office. That's what all the arms of the family office will refer to. So whether it be the offshore company in Turks and Caicos or Cayman or Jersey, or whether it be the UK UK holding company or its company in India, they all will have to refer back and follow those rules that are set out for them in that. When it comes to family, the first thing we do when we set up a single family office is we decide with the family who does what and how much power each member of the family will have, what is their role, and if indeed there will be members of the family that won't actually work for the family office, but they may have an advisory role, and how much is that actually worth, and how much do advisors have to listen to that particular family member. That's all set out at the beginning, because otherwise you end up with a lot of arguments and people get annoyed, and suddenly you have the family office being dissolved because they just can't work together. The other important thing to remember is that a successful family office always has advisors on its board who are not members of the family, because they act as the mediator. And when I say not members of the family, they mustn't either be related in any way, so not just members of the family, but also particularly close to a member of the family.
Very interesting.
It's always better to have independent people on that board.
Yeah.
They act as the mediator in case there's any sort of brand arguments or so forth.
Indeed.
And again, within the charter, you make provision for things like divorce, potential relationships going sour. Another scenario I give you, for example, we had, and this comes up quite often, we had a member of a family office in the family who was involved in a relationship that went sour. The person who was leaving on the relationship thought that this particular person, because he happened to come from a very wealthy family, that what they had, the property they had been using, and they, for example, and all the various things that they had the benefit of, belonged to this particular gentleman. And of course it didn't, because they all belonged within the structure, within the family office, and he was just given the use of them, but he didn't actually own them. So therefore, when it came to bringing suit against this particular gentleman, it was pretty obvious that he didn't own all the wonderful things that this lady thought he'd own. So when the relationship went sour and there was a bit of question as to whether she had been there for the relationship, or where she had been there because she probably thought she was going to get a wonderful house or yacht or whatever out of it. That does happen, I'm afraid, and we see that quite often, and vice versa. We see gentlemen running after ladies or same-sex couples, and unfortunately, where wealth is involved, there is that always that worry that somebody's there for the money rather than for the actual person.
That's right.
And that's a great protection that the family office offers as well, because you have that separation. They have the use of it, but they don't actually own it. So it does give that protection. So older members of the family, in this case it was great-grandparents, were very much reassured, because although they had to look after the poor chap who was rather broken-hearted, they hadn't lost huge assets out of the family office. So that was okay. That's one protection. So there was always an upside, if you like.
Yes.
So that's another thing, the protection that it gives you. Also on succession, when somebody dies, there is that whole vacuum. A successful family office always makes sure that we have plans for the deaths of the people going forward. So we're all going to die one day. We know this, but we have to put in place protection so that if, for example, when the patriarch goes or the matriarch goes, that's there. We all know what everybody's doing. So there isn't this great void in power. And that's, again, another thing you get within a single family office, a well-structured one. You don't get that void. When somebody dies, there's a power vacuum and then all the family squabbles. That's very much so. You see that all the time in families where they don't have this sort of structure in place. And there's that scrabble to who's going to be next in line, you know, who's going to be the next power person in the family. You don't get that in a family office.
Thank you for listening to the iMoney Show, brought to you by iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
Olivia Cooper, you are the head of private wealth and family office at Axiom DWFM. In terms of resources for people setting up what we are talking about today, a family office, and making sure that their wealth and future investments are taken care of, what resources are available to people?
Well, to be honest, if you Google single family office, the amount of various PDFs you can download, advice on what is a single family office, how to set one up, and so forth. So there's a lot of literature out there. So you can do some basic reading, certainly. But then I would suggest that the next step is to actually do your reading, talk with members of your family and say, look, this is what I'm thinking of doing. And I think this is the best way we're going to move forward. And what do you think? So you can gauge their opinions as well. And then I think you need to actually contact your lawyer, who is actually being able to advise you on this, because this is very much so. And again, you might want to, and I'm not pushing myself forward necessarily, but you might want to actually talk to lawyers who work in this field, because it is quite it's a specialized field. So it's not just a private client. This is a specialized field of family office structuring. So go and speak to a lawyer, and they will be able to tell you, well, yes, you would suit a single family office, and this is potentially what you can do. And then don't let them browbeat you. Go away and think about it and talk with members of your family, and then go from there. But there's plenty of literature online. I mean, I myself have written numerous articles on succession planning and so forth, and they're all available online as well. So please have a little read about it, and then go and see a proper specialist.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.